श्रीला गुरुदेव की जय, श्रीमन महाप्रभु की जय, श्री हरि नाम संकीर्तन की जय, श्री श्री गौर गदाधर जी की जय, श्री श्री राधा गोविंद जी की जय, गौर भक्त वृंद की जय, गौर प्रमाण हरि बोल। सो गुड इवनिंग टू ऑल ऑफ यू। फर्स्ट ऑफ ऑल प्रणाम, थैंक्स सो मच फॉर कमिंग।
Doing just arrived.
Welcome, pleasure to meet you. So today we have Ishtagosti questions and answers, and our Krishna Chandra Prabhu has started the revolution with his introduction question or topic, requesting to share some words about this concept of Nam Seva, and how to approach, in his words, this titanic project of developing an eternal loving relationship with Srinam. So it may sound a little strange for some to develop a relationship with the sound, but of course we have to understand that the sound is a person. And we are relating to a person through a sound. In this case, a person, of course, a divine couple, Srishi Radha Govinda Dev. So we want to give pleasure to them. So what's the meaning of this? Because, of course, as Krishna Chandra Prabhu said, when we are chanting, externally, all of us are chanting, but internally, each one may be doing different things. No? Some may be, I'm not saying you, but sometimes, in some cases, some may be just counting, not chanting. So it's not counting the holy name, it's chanting the holy name. You don't count a loving relationship. If you want to establish a loving relationship, it's not about numbers, not about calculation, counting. What to speak, counting, praying when this will be over. You are praying when this will never be over, when I will reach that point where it's painful for me to wake up from my bhajan. It's getting difficult to leave my asana, my bhajan. That's the moment that you can conclude, okay, some mercy, real mercy. I'm being able to catch some real mercy. Some people sometimes have criticized our Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta, saying he was not a Raganuga Bhakta, and that's why he conducted this big preaching mission. He didn't have the capacity of becoming a fully absorbed Bhajananandi. Those who say that are missing a very important chapter in the life of Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta. Right before he started his preaching mission, and that's when he sat for Sat Kotinam Yajna, which means basically to chant 1 billion names in a row, basically, which means one decade, basically, of chanting 3 lakhs every single day. 192 rounds per day for 9 years approximately. Then he woke up and started Gaudiya Math on the basis of his bhajan. So for him, it's not that, okay, I have to preach and do many managerial things because it's difficult for me to sit and chant. For him, it was difficult to wake up for the sitting and chanting. He was feeling so much drawn and attracted to serve Srinam. So, Nam Seva is a very confidential topic. And actually, the ultimate goal of our life is inside there. Everything is in Nam Seva. If properly understood, what's Nam and what's Seva? Because we may be accustomed to use the words Nam, Seva, holy name, service, but how does it translate in practice, and which are the fullest implications of that. As we mentioned the other day, Krishna in the Gita, for example, when he mentions how to obtain real knowledge from Sri Guru, he will use the word seva there, but before seva, he will say some other things. He will say pranipat, pariprasna, and then we can speak about seva. So first he's saying surrender. Then he's saying be humble. And then we can speak about seva. Sometimes we want to do seva, begin doing seva first. But we think that seva sometimes is just doing some things. No? Give me something to do. So I do some service. And of course, we appreciate that, but that may not be seva. No? We never know if that's seva.
Welcome! Radhe! This is Prema Devi.
Nice to meet you, Prema. Welcome. So seva, in one sense, comes up as the fruit, if you will, of a whole process of surrender, of offering ourselves, of opening our hearts, of doing sacrifice, as Krishna Chandrapur was saying. In the path of grace, we run this risk of becoming lazy. Because Krishna is so merciful that I don't need to do that much. He's so merciful. Something like this. But Krishna's mercy is not an excuse to be lazy. On the contrary. In Krishna's, if you really appreciate the principle of mercy, that will inspire you to make the greatest effort you can do in your life. That's what we see in our great acharyas. They had the greatest realization of Krishna's mercy, and they were making the greatest efforts in Krishna's seva. The more you realize how merciful Krishna is, the more you will be making some effort in relation to that mercy. It's not that I have full realization of Krishna's mercy, so I don't need to do anything now. Because he's so merciful. It's not like that. He is so merciful, and I deserve so little, so nothing, that mercy, that I cannot just remain with my arms crossed and just ask for mercy. As we say today, costless mercy doesn't mean priceless mercy. There's a price to pay. There's a currency in which we have to invest ourselves. Sometimes we think costless mercy is something like cheap to ask. But that's very high price to get costless mercy. Because as we say, I said the other day, costless mercy means no matter what you do, you will never deserve that. Try to imagine. Even if you make the highest possible effort you can do, still that mercy is higher than what you are doing. So you will never deserve that. So in order to always receive that you will never deserve, you have to have lots of humility. Because if you are not too humble, you won't be able to tolerate something that you don't deserve. You want to deserve something. That's the reality in the world. People want to deserve. So that takes you to the realm of justice. You obtain what you deserve, karma. You want to deserve something? Okay, no problem. Karma department is waiting for you. But mercy department means, I will never deserve that. So in order to remain connected with mercy, I have to have that higher humility in which I don't deserve that, and it's okay. So in one sense, it's higher the price to obtain mercy than to obtain justice. You follow my point? To obtain justice, you just try to deserve things from your ego. You deserve what you deserve. Generally, big headache. But to obtain costless mercy, you have to be very humble. So all this is connected with Nam Seva, because Nam Seva is crying for mercy, basically. Crying for something that I don't deserve, but I need deeply, as we said the other day. So that's why Mahaprabhu say the only way you can chant Srinam successfully is embracing the third sloka of Shikshastakam. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami said, you will attain Prem by chanting Srinam only if you chant following the spirit of this verse. Only with that humility. Because if that humility is not there, you won't be able to cry for mercy. It will be too painful for your ego to cry for mercy constantly. But if you are humble, that will be your that will be a great relief. That will be a great celebration. So, so Nam Seva again. Seva means, technically speaking, giving pleasure to the object of my affection. Sometimes we translate that service. And it's okay if you understand what's the meaning of service. Because you have devotional service, but also you have military service, social service, so many services. But here we are interested in a very specific way of service, which is how I can give pleasure to the object of my affection. And who is the object of my affection? And what does give pleasure to the object of my affection? Because Krishna is known as Rasik Sekar, which means the king of all relishers. So he only finds pleasure in very specific things. You cannot give just something like this and expect find pleasure there. He's a very refined connoisseur, as we will say. Connoisseur, you follow? So if someone is a connoisseur, has a very sophisticated tongue, if you will, to relish, whether the food, or if it's with music or arts, they will be able to appreciate things that practically nobody else can appreciate. So he has this high standard, if you will. So if you want to approach such a person, we have to understand what the thing that makes his tongue alive, if you will, the connoisseur. Shastra say Bhava Grahi Janardana. Bhava Grahi Janardana, which means Krishna is only taking the essence of the attitude we are offering. So we may say, oh, how fortunate. Krishna is not seeing all the details, external, false, formal things that I'm doing wrong externally. How great relief. Yes, but he's only taking the essence of your attitude. So in one sense, that's more challenging. Because I cannot entertain him with some external show. He will go all right through all that and see what's the essence of your attitude. Hopefully there is some essence in my attitude. Because if not, Krishna has no ears and no eyes to perceive that. The famous example, as you know, is when Duryodhan prepared this big feast for Krishna. Externally wanting to please Krishna, but internally he wanted to have Krishna on his side before the Kurukshetra war. It was a totally calculated, how do you say, maneuver? Yeah. The word maneuver? In Spanish it's maniobra. Anyhow, some calculated movement trying to manipulate them. Okay. But externally seemed, oh, he prepares such a huge feast for Krishna. All the different preparations that Duryodhan learned that Krishna likes. But there was no bhakti there. And as we know, Krishna says, Patram pushpam phalanto yam, yome bhakti prayachati, tadham bhakti uparitam ashnami prayatatmana. He said, flower, fruit, water, leaf, even in singular, he's mentioning in that verse. One flower, one leaf, one water, I don't know what's one water, but one drop of water, enough. But in that verse he uses the word bhakti twice. So he says one leaf, one water, but bhakti, bhakti. No, that cannot be missing in the recipe. The masala has to have bhakti, bhakti. Bhakti masala, if not, Krishna is not hungry. Krishna's diet is on the basis of bhakti. Bhakti makes Krishna's stomach like, no, to be hungry. Duryodhana was not putting bhakti in the masala. So Krishna walks all this feast, he continued walking, like if he will be walking in the desert, there's nothing here. He just went straight to the house of Vidura, as you may know. Vidura is a great bhakta, but externally being born in a low caste and all these external details that were not in place, but his heart was full in place. And that's important thing for Janardhan, Baba Grahi Janardhan. So Krishna knocked on Vidura's house. Vidura was not at home, but Vidura's wife was there, as you know. She was surprised. Imagine you are in your house and someone, you open Krishna. and not only that, but Krishna, you see, Krishna sees you say, he says, I'm hungry. You have something to eat? No? Nothing like good morning, how are you? Can I enter? No, she entered the house, I'm hungry. No, like when you go and visit your mom, you don't tell your mom, excuse me, mom, do you think that there may be something extra in the fridge? I'm hungry. No. Probably she will tell you before, are you hungry? Even if you say, I'm not hungry, do you have, and you put something in your mouth. No? That's what Salya Bhav, no? That's Yashoda with Krishna. No? In the eyes of Yashoda, Krishna is always undernourished. No? He's never eating enough. He's always like this. In Yashoda's Vatsalya, you never eat enough, you never eat enough. Eat more, eat more, eat more. So as we know, the wife of Vidura said, I have nothing to offer you. I have not prepared anything. You came just by surprise. And we are so poor, we don't have anything. I only have some few bananas here. And Krishna, again, Krishna is hungry for bhakti. Krishna is not hungry for bananas, for sabji, for dal. He wants bhakti. So he went where bhakti was, present. I'm hungry. He knew, there is bhakti. I'm hungry then. No? Like Krishna Chandra Prabhu was telling me today, Maharaj, I'm hungry. I'm thirsty. I'm hungry. Open your mouth and speak Harikatha. Okay, so I'm trying to feed Krishna Chandra Prabhu's digestive fire, which is very powerful. He always asks for more. Insatiable. Bhima is just a joke, how much he eats compared to how much Krishna Chandra Prabhu is digesting internally. So he's our Bhima in devotional terms. Devourer of Harikatha, asking for more. So Krishna was hungry for bhakti. So he said that, and Vidura's wife said, I only have some bananas. So Krishna didn't care for bananas. He said, bring whatever you have. He knew they will come with the bhakti masala inside. But what we know, Vidura's wife has such love for Krishna, that when she took the bananas offered to Krishna, she was so investing so much her heart there that she started to peel the bananas. And what did happen? She started to throw the bananas and to give Krishna the peels. That's not in the cooking book there, Hare Krishna cooking book in the kitchen. No? Offer banana peels to Krishna. But when you have Prem, the offering may change. Like when Sanatan Goswami was worshipping Madan Mohan, and Madan Mohan at one point asked Sanatan Goswami was offering Madan Mohan one little bread without salt. That was a daily offering. That was what he had. That was the contract they established. I can offer this on a daily basis. Madan Mohan said yes. But one day Madan Mohan said, do you have maybe a little bit salt to put on the bread? Of course, to begin with, that's not in the Archana Padati. No, in the manual how to worship the deity, it doesn't say what should you say if the deity starts to speak with you. But this happened to Sanatana Goswami. So Manmohan said, "Do you have some salt?" And Sanatana said, "No, I don't have salt. And I told you I don't have salt. So there is no salt. And I know you," Sanatana said. "First you ask for salt. Then if I give you salt, then you will ask for ghee, for kachori, pakora, ladu. No. I have only this. So if you like, you stay with me. If not, you can go." That was Sanatana Goswami's reply to Thakurji. Again, that's not in the Archana Padati. So similarly, you know, Vidura was giving to Krishna banana peels. No? So Krishna says in the Gita, no? I accept flower, fruit. He says, I accept. He's not saying, I necessarily eat that. I can accept. This is with love, thank you. But Krishna did not only accept the peels. He took the peels. He started to devour the peels, one after another. And of course, Vidura's wife was not aware what's going on. And Krishna was not aware what's going on. You follow? The two of them were blinded by love. Love is blind, they say, right? And Vidura comes into the house and he sees that scene. His wife giving banana peels to Krishna. And Krishna eating all these banana peels. In ecstasy, the two of them in ecstasy. Vidura says, "What's going on in my house here?" He tries like to stop her wife. "What you are doing? How can you offer banana peels to Bhagavan?" And Krishna stops Vidura. Says, no, don't chastise her. She's doing the right thing. She's offering her heart so much that she loses sight of the technicality of the details of that. Peel, banana, secondary. So that's Baba Grahi Janardana. Krishna only sees the essence of our offering. But again,
he even after this disturbance with Vidura, she realized and she gave the banana and put the peels away.
Mm-hmm.
And Krishna said, "It's not the same anymore."
Yeah. It was better. Some calculation there.
Yeah.
So in this way, of course, the question is, can we do that without imitating that? Because it's not okay, let's go now to Gorga Dadar. Let's take banana peels and offer banana peels to Gorga Dadar. If you are aware that you are offering banana peels, that's aparat. You follow? If you are unaware of that because of divine ignorance of prem, that's another thing. Gyan Sunya Bhakti. There's no calculation. So again, our hope is that Krishna is only seeing the essence, but also that's our greatest challenge. Because the question is, how much essence do I have to offer at present? How much of an essentialist I am? How much I have to become that Saragrahi person? So, Nam Seva, or invoking Srinam for the pleasure of Hari, basically implies we are the offering, basically. The offering is not banana, the offering is not peel, the offering is not grains of rice into the fire. The real swaha is ourselves entering there. Nam is yajna, also. Sacrifice. But the idea to chant Srinam from a place that will give pleasure to Hari is to get rid of all these misconceptions that we have been speaking these days. For example, to be free from the idea that I am the chanter of the holy name. If you think I am chanting Srinam, that's a form of ego. I am not chanting. Hopefully Srinam is dancing in my tongue and making me a puppet of his grace. But I am not the chanter of the holy name. You follow? It's kind of putting the spotlight on, okay, now I will chant Srinam. As we say today in the morning, only if Krishna agrees to descend and manifest, I can contact Srinam. It's not that I can force Krishna to appear in my tongue whenever I like. That's not the disposition. That's not the way to address our relationship with Bhagavan. We can have some desire, have some aspiration, but he has the last word, if you will. That's like the preliminary foundation. We fully trust his, her mercy and love on us. But we are trying to, how to say, as my Guru Maharaj likes to say, we are not trying to make Srinam part of our agenda. We are interested in becoming part of the agenda of Srinam. The Holy Name has an agenda of his own, a plan of his own. And we want to be part of that. Not so much, hey, adapt to I already have this great plan, so please now make this successful. This is the plan. So you come and make magic here. But what's your plan? How can I serve you? What's your necessity? Of course, there are levels of chanting. In the beginning, we may still have so many so-called necessities. And we approach Srinam with that idea in mind. Please provide, give, help me, relieve me. Thank you. It's okay, Krishna will say. At least he's approaching me. But the more we grow in our relationship with the name, we realize, again, the name is a person. And this person has necessities out of love. That's a very mysterious idea. Krishna is Atmaram, as we were speaking the other day. He's self-satisfied on one level. On another level, he's not satisfied. He's always hungry for more. Because that's the nature of love. Love fulfills you, but it can always grow. So since it can always grow, there's always room for more, and makes you needy for that more. So that's the paradox of love. You are self-satisfied, but you are transcendentally dissatisfied. There can always be more. So a necessity comes, not due to lack of love, but out of love. When we don't have love, we have so many necessities. An ending list. I need. When we have love, we also have necessities. But of a different type. Like the Rasa Lila. No? Rasa Lila. In Rasa Lila, Krishna is meeting with the gopis. Krishna is fooling himself. Krishna is full. The gopis are full in him themselves. So, but they have a need. The need is to celebrate their fullness. My Guru Maharaj likes to speak about these three layers: karma, jnana, and bhakti. In karma, we are moving in this world, running here and there, because so many desires we have. So we cannot just sit still, like the Buddha did. He attained perfection just by sitting. Try to imagine. How to attain perfection? Just sit below that tree. What else? Just sit. What else? Remain seated. What else? Stop asking what else. Sit. After 5 minutes, you start to get nervous. Because there are so many things that are moving us in the world. I need this, acquiring, acquisition. Trying, because we think, I will become more in the material platform. We think, by having more, I will become more. Of course, on one level you realize, it's not like that. It doesn't work like that. So instead of moving here and there, I can just sit. That's more connected with the Gyan path. Sit and meditate. No more desires in my heart. I don't need to run here and there in the world. I can just be in peace. Shanti, shanti, shanti. of course, our goal is not shanti. As the hippies will say, peace and
love.
No? That comes an important word there. So, karma means to run here and there, if you will, in the world, impelled by material desires. Gyan means to stop all movement and be in peace. And bhakti means, you see Mahaprabhu, his associate, they are not just like, they are moving a lot. But their movement is different. There's a different movement in their hearts, and that takes them to move externally in a different way. Their movement is celebratory movement. So they move out of fullness. They are so full that they feel the need to wake up and dance and celebrate. So it's a different movement than the movement of the follower of karma. They are full. Like when you love, you cannot remain seated. You need to do something with that. That's overflowing you. So the idea is that love creates this necessity of celebration, this necessity of movement. So Krishna, Sri Radha and Krishna, Sri Harinam, divine couple in this unique, mercifully form, they have lots of necessities of service. They have more necessities than we have, technically speaking. We think we have so many necessities. But if we don't love, our necessities are kind of a joke, basically. Real necessities come when you love. Those are real necessities. Why? Because, for example, as we were reading yesterday, in the Nishanta Lila, what Sri Radha and Krishna had to separate themselves, and each one has to turn back homeward, they have to leave home and go to the so-called home. For them, that separation is basically worse than death. They are dying in separation from each other. That's real necessity. In this world, we can say, I cannot live without you. But generally, we don't walk the talk. But we see Krishna is going out of Vrindavan for 100 years, and still all the Vrajavasis are waiting. He said he will return. Somehow they managed to survive. They're making a great effort to keep their lives in, to keep their prana flowing. That's the biggest sacrifice. Let's remain alive. Because if Krishna comes and sees that we are dead, he will suffer. So the last thing we want to do is to make him, to cause him the least suffering. Even if for us that's such a big baggage we have to carry with our life for one century in separation from Krishna. Somehow let's survive for his pleasure. So Sri Radha Krishna, Sriman Mahaprabhu, Srila Gurudev, as we spoke the other day, Tunde Tanda Vinira Timbitanuti, Tundavali Labdhai, and so on. They are desperate personalities. They are very in need of support. On a daily basis, Radha and Krishna are about to die in separation from each other, many times per day. And part of our service, when we will enter that realm, believe it or not, but part of our service will be to save their lives every single day. You think that's a joke? Better you prepare for that. You will have to save the life of God on a daily basis many times, every single day for eternity. That's a very needy place. So they are in need of service. They are in need of support. They are in need of hope. When Krishna can no longer tolerate separation from his Praneshwari, he needs some consolation from someone like Subal or some Priyanarma Saka who will him whisper something in his ear and give hope, and Madhu Mangal will bring one garland of malati flowers which resemble the complexion of Radha, and he will put that garland on him, which is a confirmation, you will meet her very soon. And that garland was used by her and was sent by Radha's manjaris. It's a whole operation with different assistants. They put in the garland of Sri Radha, receiving her Mahaprasad. The manjaris are running. They know Krishna is about to die. They hand the garland to the Priyanarmasaka. The Priyanarmasaka are running. Krishna is about to die. They put the garland. And Krishna is like going back to life once again. There is hope. There is hope. So I'm saying all this just for you to understand. This is not like I'm going to Golok Vrindavan and I just have a nice time and relax there and do something here and there, wash some pots,
and relax.
Relax. Now as a sadhaka here, I'm doing all this effort, but when I reach there, eternal resting for it. I have my cloud, eternal cloud, and I will be like just relaxing for eternity. That's not our idea of heaven, basically. Our idea of heaven is 24/7, full day, Ashtakaliya Seva. When you read the Ashtakaliya Seva that we are studying these days, you will you may wonder, at which point they go to sleep? Because when they are going to sleep, almost immediately they are waking up already.
We just published Sankalpa Kalpa Dhruma, which is a 24-hour Seva meditation.
Basically. So my point with this is, we have to understand all the things in such a way that we feel charmed by that. That we don't feel scared by that. Oh, I won't have time to sleep, better I stay here then. Or something like that. But we start to understand, when there is love, there's no time to sleep, basically, in one sense. There's no time to eat. You will forget about that. For example, tomorrow is Ekadasi. So sometimes devotees do complete fast, nirjal. So once someone asked Srila Siddhar Maharaj, Guru Maharaj, why should we fast completely on Ekadasi? And Srila Siddhar Maharaj basically said, you don't understand, he said. Complete fast in Ekadasi means this. He said, in Ekadasi you become so absorbed in chanting, hearing, in embracing the angas of bhakti, you become so absorbed that you forget about eating, sleeping, and so on. In that sense, you are expected not to eat and sleep. Only if that happens as a byproduct of absorption. You follow my point? It's not that I have to pass the whole Ekadasi not eating and I'm all Ekadasi thinking about eating. No? Oh, tomorrow is Janmashtami. Janmashtami means fasting till midnight. Well, that's not what Janmashtami is about. If you will be meditating the whole day long about the 108 preparations, better you break the fasting immediately, calm your stomach, and focus on Krishna. I mean, I'm not saying this is an excuse to go and eat as quick as possible, but my point is, these things have to happen. It's a natural byproduct of absorption. You forget eating, sleeping. So what is speaking? The Nitya Dham. So, but even if they eat or sleep, because they do, that will be also seva. That's an interesting thing. We may be not doing seva even while being awakened, but they are doing seva even when they are sleeping. Whatever they do in the Dham, the associates, it's only for the pleasure of Krishna. Even if they are resting or going to sleep, they're only dreaming about serving him in different ways and so on. So, so I'm saying all this because we're speaking again about Nam Seva. Don't forget the main focus. So Nam Seva means to offer ourselves for the pleasure of Srinam. And the pleasure of Srinam has to do also with the necessity of the moment. Because our service will be there will be remuneration to our service according to the necessity of the moment. Mm-hmm. Bhaktivinoda Thakur once says, I would like to leave my body in Kurukshetra. I was like, oh. Because generally Vaishnavas will say, I would like to pass away in one of the dhams. Puri, Navdia, Vrindavan. But Kurukshetra generally is not considering the equation. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, I want to leave my body there. So that's very mysterious, very interesting. So he said, that's quite tight. We spoke recently about that in Ratha Yatra. Why he's saying this? Because in Kurukshetra, as you may know, Bhagavad Gita was spoken, but something else happened before Bhagavad Gita. And that thing that happened is affecting Krishna speaking of Bhagavad Gita, actually. And what's that? Krishna has met the Vrajavasis for the solar eclipse after almost a century of separation. After that, he spoke Bhagavad Gita. And our commentators will mention how in different verses, oh, Krishna here is remembering the Vrajavasis and got lost in the battlefield. So in that moment, Krishna is meeting the Vrajavasis. It's a long section I will make short. And at one point he's meeting the gopis and Sri Radha in particular in private. Mai bhaktirhi bhutanama mrittataya kalpate disyat yadasi matsneho bhavatinam madapana. He's saying things like this. Every person thinks that by connecting with me they are fortunate. But Krishna says, but I feel that by me being connected with you, I am fortunate. Everyone thinks I'm making them fortunate. But I, Krishna, is saying, I'm feeling I'm fortunate by connecting with you, but the love you have for me, that makes me fortunate, he says to the gopis. And of course, then the gopis will say, Ahus chati, nalina nava, padar, vinda, namedya, things. When Krishna is telling Sri Radha, you can come with me to Dwarka. I can make you my queens there, I can give you a palace, a number of elephants. You have all the servants you want. What do you think? The gopis will agree? I was in Finland. We were speaking about that with a group of God brothers. It was nice. I was describing all this and contrasting this bhava of Dwarka and Vrindavan. And at one point, one of my God brothers raised his hands, like difficult. He cannot contain. Say, Maharaj, I hate Dwarka. So he spoke from a fanatical side in the proper sense of the term, as we spoke this day. No? I hate Dwarka. I don't know, I don't like that. And he's someone with knowledge. He's not just being sentimental. So he's making a point with that. No? Like, how can Krishna tell that to the gopis? So, of course, as we know, Sri Radha will say to Krishna, first he's inviting that, and then he's inviting, and we can unite here in this precise moment, in this place again. But Radha says, where's your peacock feather? Where's your flute? Krishna is not playing flute outside of Raj, because he's not as inspired outside of Raj. No, he's not receiving proper udipana to pick the bamsi. So there is no flute in Dwarakesh Krishna. There is no peacock feather. So Radha will say, where is the Jamuna? Where is Vrindavan? In conclusion, where are you? Where is Braja Krishna? I'm not finding the object of my love. The object of my love is not just Krishna, but Braja Krishna. Aradyo Bhagavam Brajesya Tanayas Tadhama Vrindavanam. So our object of worship is Brajesya Tanayas, the son of Nanda Maharaj, that Krishna. With all respect, we don't care for the son of Vasudev, with Krishna outside of Braj. Those are some other expansions, but Brajavasis are no interest in that. So Sri Radha has Krishna here, in front of her, but at the same time she doesn't have Krishna there. Krishna is there, but Krishna is not there. The playground, the stage for the drama to be enacted, is not there. Vrindavan is not there. So the union cannot take place. So you can imagine at that moment how much necessity Radha has, how much in need she is in Kurukshetra. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, I want to leave my body at that moment in Kurukshetra. I want to enter eternally in that window and serve Radha in her moment of greatest necessity forever. That was the point he wanted to make. And interestingly, Bhaktivinoda Thakur had the resources to make arrangements to leave his body in Kurukshetra, live there, have a place there, but he didn't do that. So by saying that, he was making a point, actually. The point is, I want to enter into that eternal moment of the greatest service necessity and remain there perpetually, serving my Swami. So this is totally in connection with our Nam Seva. It's about caring for what's your need. And how can I offer myself according to the need of the moment? I don't want to be indifferent to your need, to what you want. Because if we are indifferent, that's a form of mayabad, basically. That's a form of impersonalism. Because chanting is developing our relationship with Krishna. So if in a relationship, I have to care for the other person. If I don't care, I'm indifferent. How much of a relationship is there? How much personalists we are? So it's not so easy to not be impersonal. You follow? It's not just let's condemn Advaita Bhat. No, it's not. You can be impersonal in so many ways. So we are individuals. So our task as sadhakas is, how can I offer my individuality in the most tasteful way for the pleasure of Srinam? How can I develop my individuality, my personality, in a way that is able to assist them in their moments of highest necessity? That may require lifetimes of preparation. It's a big project. It's not like, okay, I need 2-3 years for my PhD and I get it. But here you may see maybe 2-3 but lifetimes of serious practice. Because what's going on there, it's serious. That's not a joke. Someone once asked Srila Prabhupada, why in some of the pictures you appear so serious? Because Srila Prabhupada will appear very serious in some pictures. Drink the water.
Change.
I'll have my chancels. Time for shifting of the translation. Can we do the same here to shift the speaker and someone else starts to speak? Not possible then? So someone asked Prabhupada, why you are so serious in some of these pictures? He seems like even if angry in some pictures. Of course, there are some other pictures that he's smiling so nicely. And when he was asked, why so serious? He says, well, Krishna consciousness is a very serious issue. And he became very serious. Huh? So this is something to take very seriously. Huh? The place where Mahaprabhu spent his last years in his life is called Gambhira. The very word says it all. Gambhira. Gambhira means grave. Deep, serious. Something serious is going on there. Again, this is not to be scared. or to not to be loving. No, now I will be serious and start mistreating people. We are not speaking about that seriousness. We are speaking about commitment and responsibility with the ideal. I remember I once asked, I always tell that whenever I'm going, once I asked my Guru Maharaj, this question came to me and I want to ask him, to him, what can I do to please you the most? What's that thing that I could do in your service that may give you the highest pleasure? So I can have that reply and know what to do or how to aspire to that. So he told me, try to increase your commitment with the ideal. That was his reply. Similar to Srila Siddhar Maharaj saying, try to change your angle of vision. So try to increase your commitment with this ideal that has come to you, with this so much dignity in this ideal, so much depth and seriousness. Srinam is the Srinam coming through parampara, this very, very deep thing. We say today, Nam Shrestham. This is a very famous verse of Raghunath Das Goswami. It's a long list of all the gifts we receive from Srila Gurudev. Nam Shrestham Manumapi Satchiputram Atrasvarupam Rupam Tasyagrajamuru Purim Maturim Goshtavatim Radha Kundam Giriboram Maho Radhika Madhavasam. And because of all this, Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Sri Gurum Tamnatasmi. Since I was able to attain by Gurudev's grace all the things, I give myself to him. So what's Gurudev giving us? First thing, immediately, Nam Shrestham. Nam Shrestham means the highest conception of the name. Guru is not only given Nam, but Nam Shrestham. So the ultimate level of commitment and service to the necessity of the name, as we have been describing now. That's Nam Shrestham. Not just, the name is not different from Krishna and chant. But what does it mean? Non-different from Krishna, non-different from Radha and Krishna. Who is on the other side? What's the necessity there? What's my part in that? And through that Nam Shrestham, so many things are coming. Satchinandan Gaur Hari, Rupa Sanatan, Giriraj Govardhan, Radhakunda, Vrindavan, Radhika Madhavasam, the hope to obtain Sri Sri Radha Madha. So many gifts. So many gifts are given, now I have to give myself as a gift in reciprocation, basically. So that's what we are trying to do when trying to engage in Nam Seva. Krishna has approached me, and now instead of chanting, I'm thinking, whatever, something has to happen. Some people think different things. Some people think I have to chant and I have to start to see some colors or some mystical vision, some entertainment, some show. Once one lady went to Srila Prabhupada and said, every time I chant Maha Mantra, I see one red light that starts to appear like in my third eye. So she was thinking, wow, this is pretty mystical. And Prabhupada said, keep chanting that the light will disappear soon. Don't worry for the red light. Keep chanting, it will disappear soon. Like implying, we are not looking for red light, color lights or anything. We are not even looking for, let's see if Krishna makes me feel something or he appears. He already appeared and that's why you are chanting. I mean, he took the initiative. Krishna took the initiative. It's not that we took the initiative. The higher plane takes the initiative. And that's why we are trying to reply, to give back the embrace that has been thrown to us. You know, they have embraced us, and now our attempt is try to give the embrace back. So we shouldn't be so much calculating when Krishna will reply, how he will reply. He already replied, and that's why you are chanting. So we should be concerned, how can I reciprocate in the proper mood, in the proper way? Not so much concerned with what they can make me feel. Bhaktivigyan Bharati Maharaj once mentioned that. We shouldn't make Sri Harinam or even the concept of Prem or Rasa something for our servant's enjoyment. When I get Prem or Rasa, I will experience so many things. A devotee in that level is not thinking about experiencing things. They are thinking about making Radha and Krishna experience things. Even when some ecstasy is coming, we have these famous verses of Daruka and some others. Daruka is serving Bhagavan, and some ecstasy comes, and trembling starts to come, and all this, and he's unable to continue finding Bhagavan because of ecstasy. So he goes here, and he starts to pronounce a curse. Like the Brahmin is like, I curse you. But he starts to curse his own ecstasy. Like, leave me, get out of here. No, you are interfering with my loving service to my master. I don't want to see you here. That's kind of one way of putting that. No? We are not serving Krishna to feel something. This idea came to me. We don't want to serve Krishna so we feel something. We want to feel something so we serve Krishna. You follow? Follow my point. We don't want just to serve Krishna so as a result all the different things come. But we want to feel something, some initial inspiration and call, so we can give ourselves for the pleasure. So Krishna can feel something. Sri Radha Mahaprabhu can feel something. Because love is about self-forgetfulness, basically. Of course, before self-forgetfulness comes self-sacrifice. Where you are doing sacrifice and you are aware that you are doing sacrifice. But at one point, you are forgetful of yourself. Again, we cannot imitate this. But we should know how all the stages that are waiting for us in our journey. And we should conduct ourselves in the present in such a way that we are walking in that direction. Anyhow, some words, already an hour. But Krishna Chandra Prabhu's questions are always dangerous. There's so much more to say, for sure. Just touching one.
He's not translating because it's about him.
Okay, I see. You compliment nicely. It's okay. You're a good thing. So we have a few minutes. If someone else has any other question, we can.
You spoke today about how each name of Krishna has a really purpose or meaning, which is actually important in the context of the verse or something like this. So I was wondering in Manashiksha, Sanatana Goswami, I think it's the fifth verse, where he says, "Lust, anger, greed is like..."
Raghunath Das Goswami? Not Sanatana Goswami. Yeah. Okay.
Are like dark oils. So, mining you, and so just call all for the generals of the army of the killer of Bakasu. So I'm wondering why Raghunathas Goswami is calling Krishna in this context the killer of Bakasu.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. A very simple way to reply to that will be that, of course, he's referring to these dacoits, if you will. He's like personifying different anartas. No? He will speak about Pratishtha also as a mad woman, and he will give very like specific identities to the different anartas. And we know that, at least according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, all these different demons that Krishna kills in the Braja Lila represent anartas. You remember Krishna Chandra Prabhu, which is the anarta represented by Bakasur? Does anyone remember?
Bakasura Vanastijakani? Yes. He's a pretender. He's pretending to be these birds, you know?
Yes.
They're standing on one leg like a yogi in the water. But actually, they're actually waiting for an opportunity to bite the fish. They're not really yogis.
Mm-hmm.
Like there are yogis that pretend to be gurus or yogis, but they actually want disciples to exploit them. I think this was the example that was given.
Okay. And in that verse, Raghunathas Goswami is speaking about which anartas you mentioned?
Lust, anger, greed,
the kama, cruel, the loba, and so on. So again, one way of putting that will be that in certain stage of our practice, these tendencies will come to us not showing the real face, if you will, no? Not as what they actually are, but presenting us themselves as friends, if you will. Like they are coming in our best interest. I'll help you to obtain this that you need, and you need to do this, and you will progress by this and that, behaving like this, thinking like that, killing that person, whatever. Mm-hmm, exactly. So they will present in that case in a Bakasura like mood, like something in one that seems to be not dangerous, but actually it's there with another intention. And there are many stances like this. So when Raghunathas Goswami invokes Krishna as the killer of that enemy, he's asking basically, kill those enemies in me. Of course, we know that he doesn't have those enemies actually, but he's inspiring his humility to feel as if he has them. And also teaching us that all these names of Krishna have inherent power, Vastu Shakti, and according to the necessity of the moment, we can invoke these different names, and those names are not different from Krishna, and in this case, this name is not different from him who kills this Bakasura-like mentality, if you will. Again, Bakasura is not only an outer guy outside there, be careful with Bakasura. But it's inside of us. No? All these asuras are the ones that are keeping us outside of Raj, if you will. That's why all this killing of demons comes mostly before Rasa Lila, for example. You want to enter Rasa Lila, first Putana, which means the false guru. No? First you have to accept guru, and to accept guru you have to accept Sadguru, which means understand what's not Sadguru, and so on. So there is like a sequence there, and Bakasura is one of the first ones also. It's not just like the last one. So you have to deal with this kama, krodha, lobha, mada, moha, matsarya, and see them as they are, basically. That's the first step in that. How to deal with that? Well, acknowledge them first. Because if you are not even aware that you have those things, they will be moving you like a puppet, and you don't know they are there. You're thinking, oh, whatever, this is me. You identify with it. You are angry, this is me, I have character. No, you are being manipulated by krodha, by anger. And anger means you have some frustration because of some desire you were not able to fulfill. But you're hiding, masking all that in, I have a very strong character. So first you have to dismantle all that show so you can see them for what they are and work on them. So in that spirit we can call Krishna's Bhakavid, the enemy of Bhakasura. Please help me. Please give me your mercy so I can see, I can do a proper inspection of my inner landscape, basically. I don't want to cheat myself, basically. So that could be one explanation in that particular context, yeah. Of course, there are different verses, depending on the verse. No, there are verses in the Bhagavatam in which, for example, the gopis are suffering in separation from Krishna. And Sukadeva Goswami will call Krishna Kamsari, or names like this. The enemy of Kamsa. And you may wonder, why in such a high, rustic point of the Bhagavatam, Krishna is called the enemy of Kamsa? That sounds like bordering Rasavas. But the point is, Sukadev Goswami at this point, he's totally identified with the plight of the gopis. So he's feeling like them, and he's siding with them. I'm feeling, this Krishna is such a cruel guy. Huh? He's a killer of Kamsa, which means he's a kshatriya. And kshatriyas are known to sometimes have to be cold-hearted. Because you have to apply justice and fight. You cannot be too much. You have to be, no? So all implications in that name is Krishna is cold-hearted and he's making the gopis suffer like this. This shouldn't be happening. Sukadeva cannot avoid siding with the gopis at that moment. Again, he's calling Krishna there the enemy of someone, but he's in a very different situation. He's not asking Krishna, help me deal with this anartha, but Sukadeva Goswami is criticizing Krishna at that moment, siding with the gopis. So, again, depending on the context, each name will have a very unique reason there. Okay, something else? He won the boat. He won the boat. Yeah, 1 second. He won the boat to send me one message, also from one quote from Krishna Samhita. And similarly, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that Bakasura personifies cheating religion.
Oh, yeah.
So again, some form of hypocrisy, no? Showing one face, no? So duplicity, hypocrisy, all these type of dualities. So we need to be honest and sincere, basically, that's the idea. No? And honest and sincere means first, again, accepting what you have, basically. That's the first level of that. I have this. I'm a disaster yet, Krishna. Do some miracle with this. Interestingly, the word sincere, I don't know if you know the etymology of that. Okay. The ones who speak Italian may be more connected to that, no? Sincera. Well, in Spanish we say cera, no? So this kind of sincera in English will be without wax. Wax, I think, is cera, right? So this comes from the times where they were selling these big pieces of marble in which the artist will carve. So there were some pieces of marble that have some scratches. So they will put wax, cera, white wax. So it seems like, oh, this piece of marble is paka, perfect. So, okay, give me that one. So you buy, you are working. When you hit the crack, everything's broken. So there's another section in the market where the sellers are selling the marble, but they are showing you all the crackings. And they are saying, sincera. There's no wax here. So you can see all the crackings and you can work your piece of art considering the crackings. You follow my point? So sincere, I mean sincere, sincerity means I present myself to Krishna. I don't try to cover my crackings, no? To put walks and show myself like, I'm perfect Krishna, everything is nice. That's not the approach. It's like, this is who I am. Please carve me. I make a piece of art. Considering the carve, you are a very expert artist. So no matter, even if they are cracking, you will use the crackings to increase the beauty of the piece of art. So that's the whole idea behind this Bhakavit. We can connect with that, no? I have this kama, krodha, lobha, all these crackings are here. I don't want to cover them in front of you. You know everything about me, so I don't need to make a show. So please make some miracle, some piece of art with all these crackings. And Krishna say, okay. And he starts carving. And we have to allow ourselves to be carved and to trust the artist. Krishna is called Kalanidhi. It's an ocean of arts. So he can make a very nice piece of art out of ourselves. Even if at the present we feel, I'm a disaster, Krishna say, no worry, no problem. Oh, it's nice. Look here. One cracking here, but we can work with that, no problem. We can use it for increasing. And at the end, it's okay, this is the final result. Oh, wow. All our potential is coming by the grace of Bhakti. You have a question?
Yes. I kind of observe wherever is some.
It's a bit louder?
Yeah, sorry. Wherever some religious group or sangha, there are also certain traditions, religious traditions and cultural traditions maybe. And I wonder, because some of these I always find very unattractive and I get kind of distracted because of the essence. And I wanted to ask, how can I live in all these traditions and see also some helpfulness in them?
Mm.
Because this is, yeah, I wonder.
Okay. He's translating. You are translating too? All right. Okay. So, so yeah, there are different traditions. Even in our tradition, there are different traditions. Just in India, there are different traditions. Even Vaishnavism, you have so many forms of Vaishnavism. We are one of them. What to speak of other religions, other traditions, if you will. So, of course, if the tradition is a mystical tradition, if you will, because we are not so much interested in the, how to say, in the religious, social side of it. That's not the deepest side, but the mystical side of the tradition. So it's very interesting when you study the lives of different mystics, how many of them, despite their background, they reach so basically the same conclusion, on some level at least. There is some common ground to their realizations. So that's an interesting point to appreciate. Now, if you are a real mystic or a real sincere seeker, you will start to have these like intimations, like reality is like this, reality should be like that. You have this, reach these conclusions that are universally accepted by all mystics. Of course, I'm saying that on a general level, then you can enter into the details of every tradition, and every tradition will offer a particular window to transcendence. But it's good to appreciate the common ground that all of us share. Recently, I mean, not recently, 3 months ago, recently. that was in New Jersey, New York, I don't know, too many travels. Somewhere in the U.S., I was invited to an inter-religious dialogue. So, with a group of Christian people.
I saw that.
Okay. So, Prema may know better than me where that was. You ask her if you need to know more. So they invited me to speak about my tradition. But I was speaking about my tradition, and all of them in the class were like... Yeah? So, but they were not Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Of course, I tried to speak in a broad way. I was not just speaking about Rasa Leela or something. But nonetheless, I was speaking about our tradition. And at the end of the lecture, they were like, "We totally agree with everything you say." I say, yeah, that was the idea of this meeting, basically. And on that basis, we can have some differences in how we approach transcendence, but we have this deep foundation of agreement, mystical agreement. So I'm mentioning this because that's the most important thing. Because if we get stuck in the external details, Bhaktivinoda Thakur will mention this, I don't recall the terms now, but he speaks about three types of...
Alaukik, alochana...
Those three.
Three types of sectarianism.
Yeah. So one of them is more connected to, for example, the external symbols that every tradition wears, the clothes, some markings on the face, some particular hairstyle, which in one sense is something relative. No? Because in one tradition they will have like this, one tilak, another tilak, another tilak, no tilak,
another color
of tilak. I remember the other day someone asked, "Maharaj, why don't you use the Gopi Chandan? I never saw that tilak." And for the devotees, like, this is a problem. He was feeling. And I was like, it's a detail. It's not a problem. So my point is, but in the beginning, some of us need all those details, all those forms, or we think we need them. So if you have the proper tilak, the proper cloth, the cloth is always also an issue. Sometimes I'm in India, especially visiting some dear Gaudiya Math temples, and there will come some, not all of course, but some will like, "Maharaj, would you like to dye your cloth?" Because this is not the real saffron shade of it. And like, okay. So what's the real one? Oh. Sometimes they will say, "That's like the color of the tongue of a cow." And I'm just like thinking, I don't think all the cows have the same color in their tongues. And the sikh has to be of the size of the calf hoof print and all these type of measurements. Which are there to give some idea of the thing. But I laugh because I say, this color, Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta established this color. Before establishing this color, he tried green. He tried black. And finally he decided this one. So that's not something to absolutize. If Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta will be here with us, he may change again. The color. Who knows? To follow my point. But sometimes you become like, this is their most important thing. Which type of saffron you are wearing, that shows how bona fide you are or not. So that's really very kindergarten level. Only attached to these external formalities. But again, some devotees are in that stage, and there's I mean, there is place for that stage at one level. It's okay. And I'm saying this because for some of those devotees, it may be difficult to appreciate the differences in other traditions. It may be too much for them in the beginning. Because it's too much diversity. They cannot harmonize all that. Their faith is too weak. So they need something more sectarian. In the beginning again. Like the baby in the beginning will think, my mom and my dad are the best daddy and mom of the whole world. There's nobody else apart from them. Because you cannot think beyond that. You just see me, my mother, my father, and that's all. In the beginning, when you grow, you don't even see my mother and my father. It's only you. Gradually, you start to realize there are other people in reality. But there is a stage for being narrow-minded. In time, you are expected to grow. Once Srila Prabhupada was asked like that. No? Adi Kesha Prabhu Obiel Kapoor, he asked Prabhupada, why you are insisting on your disciples just only to listen to you almost? And he said, they are in a certain stage that if I expose them to all the variety of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, it will be too much for them. So now they are like in this initial, when the plant is the first sprout. Little sprout is coming in Bhakti Lata Beach. So I put a fence around. So the sprout is growing, but cannot see anything outside of the fence. This is the only thing. But the sprout is being watered. So it's growing. It's growing. The fence is here. The sprout is growing, it's growing. There's nothing apart from this. There's nothing apart from this. And at one point, the sprout is growing beyond the fence. And starts to realize, oh, there's something apart from this. But now, at that level, it's rooted enough. Has enough strength to deal with the diversity outside of the fence. In the beginning, it didn't have that rooting, that strong faith.
So, that's why in general, Srila Prabhupada also told, don't go to my god brothers or something like this. And on the other hand, I know Bhagavad Maharaj, Prabhupada taught him, go to Sejman, he will teach you this. And
yeah, of course. My Guru Maharaj was with Srila Prabhupada in his last days. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj asked Prabhupada, when you are no longer with us, is there someone else we could go for Siksha? Or is there someone else we can go? He mentioned some personalities. He mentioned Srila Narayan Maharaj, and he mentioned you can go for Siksha to Srila Bhakti Rakshasidhar Dev Goswami Maharaj. So it's not that he was keeping everything for himself, but he knew there are different people in different stages. So he has to be careful. So the idea is that, no, in the beginning, it's not the same recipe for everyone. You follow? You cannot just make everyone, okay, now go and appreciate all the different religions and processes and the variety. For some, they will come disturbed, confused. Their faith is too shaken. So in the beginning, you need to be a little bit more sectarian. But the one who is guiding you shouldn't be sectarian. So with the moment is coming, that person will take you, okay, now look there. Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, you can appreciate. And at one point, you need to appreciate other traditions. It becomes a necessity. But you should appreciate other traditions in a way that nourishes your faith in your own tradition also. That's a whole art that we were sharing with Krishna Chandra some days ago in the train.
How long did you travel?
Everything was in that conversation. Pretty condensed. This week we are unpacking all that we spoke in the train, basically. So we were sharing this section of Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Gopa Kumar, this is the first book of our Sampradaya. It's a very important book. Sanatana Goswami makes very important points in that book. And one of them is, Gopa Kumar has one affinity, as we said, Priyanarma Sakya, but he's traveling through so many other, visiting so many devotees with different affinities. And although he feels this is not my place, as we say today, he's appreciating all of those affinities. And not only appreciating, but nourishing his own affinity by seeing their affinity.
It's very interesting. Every place he comes, first he thinks, this is the most wonderful place.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And only then, by his mantra, things are coming up.
Mm-hmm.
It's not exactly that,
yeah.
But he feels so much ecstasy.
Yeah, exactly. So, for example, when he meets Hanuman in Ayodhya, we know Hanuman is partial to Sitaram. You have this famous picture, he's opening his chest. Paramatma is not there. Hanuman has no Paramatma any longer. At one point of your practice, Paramatma disappears. And Bhagavan manifests. The Ishtadev. Thank you. So Hanuman's Ishtadev is Sitaram. You saw the picture, right? So Gopa Kumar meets Hanuman, such a person. And Gopa Kumar is not trying to convince Hanuman. Hey Hanuman, you are a lower bhakta. You worship Sitaram. I worship Krishna Vrindavan. You have to follow my path. That's not Gopa Kumar. Gopa Kumar says, Hanuman, please sing the glories of your Ishtadev. Please the glories of your Prabhu. Of course, the two of them understand your Prabhu and my Prabhu is the same Prabhu. In different modes. But it's the same person. So Hanuman starts to glorify Ram. Absorbed. Ah. And Gopa Kumar hears all that and concludes saying, Jai Madangopal. No? Madangopal is his Ishtadev. You follow? So he sees the devotion, Ram Bhakti, but that nourishes his Krishna Bhakti. Because both are glorifying the same person. So he sees the sincerity of that Bhakti and that inspires his own sincerity in his Bhakti. And then Hanuman tells Gopa Kumar, please sing the glories of your Prabhu, of Madangopal. So Gopa Kumar starts to compose kirtan with the names of Krishna in the context of Sakya Bhav in Vrindavan. And Hanuman is hearing. And what will Hanuman say at the end? Jai Shri Ram! So that's the perfection of the interreligious dialogue. I'm not trying to convince you. I'm not trying to disturb you. But I'm coming to learn from you and nourish my own affinity. The same way, if I meet a devotee, I won't tell them, you have to hear the glories of my guru now. Sit down. I'll ask, please tell me the glories of your Gurudev. I would like to hear them. And when I hear that, my faith in my Gurudev will be nourished. Jai Gurudev. Because Guru is one in one sense. There are differences, but there is unity. Guru Tattva, Samastic principle, this Guru is one. So it's not that by hearing the glories of your Guru I become envious or I become disturbed, or now I will leave my Guru, I will go to your Guru. It's not like it will nourish the faith in my Gurudev. So in this way we should know how to appreciate diversity. But again, not everyone is on that level. Not everyone can just imitate Gopa Kumar. So it's important to be introspective about in which stage I am and have proper guidance from senior Vaishnavas to know what's the corresponding attitude for me in this stage regarding other practices, traditions, religions, and so on. And when you are very advanced, you can even draw meaning from
newspapers,
exactly. Once Srila Bhaktisundar Govinda Maharaj was saying, Bhaktisundar Govinda Maharaj, he was the successor acharya of Srila Siddhar Maharaj. And he says, when our Guru Maharaj, if our Guru Maharaj is such a personality, that if he reads the newspaper, he's reading Shastra actually. He's finding Shastra in the newspaper.
The newspaper.
And some persons.
Yeah.
And some persons read Shastra, but it's actually newspaper.
Yeah, I was going to say exactly that same thing. Yeah. I was just, you read my mind. On the contrary, you may take Shastra and just, it's like reading newspaper casually, as entertainment, gossip, who knows what, no? So again, there are the levels of devotees. No? So we should know where we are. We should know which is our adhikar. The Bhagavatam says, Sve svedhikare janista saguna parikirtita. Means, to know your own adhikar, to know your own position, that's, Bhaktivinoda Thakur will say, that's real beauty. To know where you are and be sincere, go back to sincere about that, that's real beauty. Transparency is real beauty. Not making a show of being somewhere I'm not. That's not beautiful. But to acknowledge where you are and where you want to be, that's beautiful. These two things are required. Where I want to be, what's my sadhya, where's my goal, my ideal, first, and then where I am. And what's the path between where I am and where I want to be. So you can establish the path there. The two things are required. Where I want to be, where I am. My Guru Maharaj gives the example, if you enter a shopping mall, hopefully you don't have to enter, but just in case. I don't think there are shopping malls nearby here, so no problem. But let's say you want to go to shop 108. So at the entrance of the mall, you have this sign with all the shops. So you have one which is 108. But you need a second indication to reach there. Another big red arrow that says, you are here. If you don't know where you are, it makes no sense. Oh yeah, there's 108, yeah, but I don't have the point of reference to arrive there. And if it only says you are here, but it doesn't tell where to go, what to do? So you need the two things. Where I want to go, where I am now. And what's the? And then only then you can establish the path, like with the GPS. No? I want to go somewhere. Where you want to go first? Where you are, this is the path.
How do I find out?
Well, for that you need
another lecture.
Also, yeah.
yeah.
But in brief words, of course we need to be, as I say, introspective, attentive, honest with ourselves, and we need to have proper guidance. And guidance that maybe also that we can relate to in close proximity also. Not to have some, at least one, hopefully more than one, but at least one close friend that really knows who we are and that we can really trust that person, and they know us and they will tell us what we need to hear, basically. Not everyone is willing to tell everyone else what they need to hear. That's not so easy. Only a friend can do that. We'll speak you on equal terms with love, no, not just like you need to hear this, no? But from the heart. No? Sometimes truth may be uncomfortable, may be challenging. Again, the guru is not someone to keep you in the comfort zone. The guru will make you uncomfortable, but with love. No? Loving discomfort or something like that. So it's
excuse me.
No, it's okay. No problem. So that's in a brief way, no? Of course, there are, have you studied Madhura Kadambini? That's a very interesting work in that connection. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is describing all the stages in bhakti and the different symptoms of all the stages. So naturally, you go through them, and there is a point that you will feel, that's me. There I am. So you need to know your place in the map, if you will. Like with Shikshastakam. The Shikshastakam is showing a progression also. It's depicting all the stages. In the beginning, you may feel more inspired. That's me. I don't have still love for the name. But when you reach verse number 7, number 8, in separation from Govinda, 1 second seems like a yuga. Maybe we don't feel like that yet, to be honest. And we cannot imitate that. That's not nice. You cannot imitate Mahaprabhu in Gambira. You will become dysfunctional psychologically if you try to. You will end up in the madhouse or something. But you can get inspired by that and establish that's a goal to attain. But I'm not there yet. So that's a goal where I am. So you search verse number 4, maybe not, number 3, maybe not, maybe number 2, maybe there. So Madhurya Kadambini is one of these books, very important, that you can really identify, relate. And it's funny, with this I will conclude. Of course, generally most of the sadhakas are in a state called Anishchita Bhajana Kriya. Let's be honest. Most, in general. Now, of course, there will be others who will be higher than that. But in terms of majority, practitioners will be in this stage called instability in bhakti. Ups and downs. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes them in detail with different symptoms. Utsamayi, ghana, tarala, vishaya, sangara, niyama, akshama, tarangarangi, and so on. And I always joke with the devotees when we are explaining those, and I start to describe each one. I say, okay, if you feel identified, you raise your hand. So I start. First symptom. Everyone is like with the two hands. So here I am, this is me. Second. And you see their face. Number 3. Struggle with the senses, difficult to maintain your vows, initial enthusiasm, but not losing it, ups and downs, tendency to enjoy the results of bhakti in the form of name, fame, position, all the things that you are like, oh my God. Yeah, it's me. Also, it's me. And at the end, I say, I have the 6 of them. I have all of them. I'm there. That's me. But the point is, okay, it's embarrassing. But at least you know where you are. That's important. It's better to know where you are, as embarrassing as it may be, than to think you are in a glorious position that you are not. That's not reality. You are living in a dream. And as embarrassing as that may be, all that is in the context of bhakti. So that's glorious. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is not saying all these stages are wrong. He's saying this will happen to every devotee. Every devotee will have to go through them. That's part of their bhakti journey. That's not the goal. You shouldn't stay there forever. But there's one point that you will have to go through them. You follow? So you shouldn't torture yourself. Oh, I must be doing something wrong. That's why I'm there. I must be offensive. That's why I'm doing... No, probably you are doing everything nice. But you have to go through those chapters. You follow my point? But you shouldn't try to justify everything so you remain there forever. Because no. But you should go through those chapters. Because all that is part of bhakti. Unstable, but bhakti. So that's bhakti. It's glorious. It's a mess on one side. It's a disaster. It's embarrassing, but it's glorious. It sounds contradictory.
Embarrassing for the ego.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Of course.
So what?
Yeah, of course. But you know that sometimes the ego speaks loud there. No? No? With lots of guilt and shame. All these trips, no? And you like, and you start to cover, to hide all those things because you feel, hopefully nobody notices this here. And that's embarrassing, to do that. That's embarrassing. But to be honest and open your heart in Sangha, in confidence, that's glorious. My Guru Maharaj once said, Sadhu Sangha, he defines Sadhu Sangha in this context. Sadhu Sangha means, at the end of the day, we will sit in a circle and we will share among each other how we failed today. Like a way of saying, we will be honest and share our embarrassing moments without hiding them. And we will be heard, we will receive some feedback, and we will be empowered. We will express our vulnerability, but we will be empowered by that. Empowerment comes from vulnerability. Don't think that vulnerability is weakness. If you show your vulnerability in proper association, that's empowering. Proper. In proper association, in a proper way. I'm not promoting abuse or anything like this, because that can happen as well. So it's not that vulnerability in itself is wrong. It just can be wrongly expressed or in a wrong environment. But the same thing that can create abuse can create empowerment. So we have to be very expert in knowing where do we open our hearts. Of course, it's a delicate decision. It's not a joke. I'm not making it cheap. But we should do it at some point. Because if not, we become too much calculative. We never do it with anyone. and that's not empowering. So we have to find that. And sometimes we may try and we fail and it didn't work. It doesn't mean we will stop trying. We have to try in a better way next time. And that's how we learn to try with more accuracy. Anyhow, some words in that connection. So being a sadhaka is a journey, for sure. It's a beautiful journey. To be a sadhaka is glorious. Do not think it's, again, embarrassing. I'm not a siddha, I'm not a perfect devotee yet. You are a sadhaka, you're a practitioner. That's one good sister of mine, she refers to that, she says, the beauty and the messiness of the sadhaka's journey. No? Yeah. Still beautiful. It's a beautiful mess. It is beautiful. There is hope, as we spoke this day. So. Okay, we'll stop here and we continue tomorrow. Day after tomorrow. Yeah, I'm just going in automatic pilot. The day after, we have to create some longing. Srila Gurudev ki jai, Sriman Mahaprabhu ki jai, Shri Hari Nam Sankirtan ki jai, Shri Gaur Gadadhar ki jai, Shri Radha Govinda Dev ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Premanand.